I need to turn this on. We both worked, and we worked a lot. We have a written budget from our first day together as a married couple, and we have been diligent since then to record our expenses and our income and to live on less than we made, which was not very much in our early years. We're debt-free now and have been so for quite some time. The intent of this lesson series is to share the scriptural basis of good money management and the lessons we learned, many of them the hard way. Each of these lessons are about 30 minutes in length, and due to the time constraints of the new Sunday school schedule, it is not an interactive class wherein you'll be asked to look up and read scriptures. They will be presented in the PowerPoint and are also on your handout if you ever want to go back and look them up. Also, it is not likely there will be time for questions. So if you have a question, please ask me after class or send me an email. But know that the first half of this week, Gene and I are going to be up in Appalachian Trail in Virginia, and I won't have cell service. But I'll get to you when I can. And I literally found out just before class started, maybe I shouldn't preempt the announcement, but they're going to change the Sunday school time in November. So I might have a few more minutes, but I've already adjusted all my schedule classes to that time period, so I may go back and put back some stuff that I'd taken out. So we'll see. Okay, so what are we going to cover in this seven-week series? The first thing I want to do is just overview the whole series and why we'd even have information, why would we have a class on finances in Sunday school, and then we'll jump to today's lesson. So first, what are we going to cover? Week one today, we're going to be talking about wealth versus money, some really simple basic information that really lays the groundwork for what we're going to do later. So if you think in your mind, boy, this is pretty simple. Yeah, it is, but not everybody is on board with that. And then we're going to talk about ownership and stewardship. Second week, we're going to be talking about work, and that's how you create wealth. The third week is how you manage the wealth. Fourth week, we're going to talk about what destroys your wealth, and that's debt and a consumptive lifestyle. The fifth week, we're going to talk about giving. That is giving to the Lord and to the needs of others from a scriptural point of view, and it may surprise you. We're going to talk about passing it on. That is instructing your children in these same principles in the sixth lesson. The seventh lesson, we're going to talk about wet bread and bubbles, and you'll just have to wait to find out what that is. Okay, when I first began this series, I think it was back in 2006, and it has changed and modified since then, but when I first began it, the session admonished me as follows. Now, it was probably the first Sunday school class I ever taught here, and they want to make sure I didn't go down some heretical path. He said, as for teaching both biblical principles and practical wisdom, take pains throughout your class to explain at each point which is which, so that we do not inadvertently confuse even the very best commandments of men with the conscience-binding doctrines of God, like Jesus criticized the Jews for doing. So I boiled it down to this. Is it sinful, or does it just lack sense? Now, why should we have a Sunday school lesson on personal finances or Christian stewardship? There are over 800 verses in the scriptures about money. The average household credit card, and this is on a continuous balance, not like you pay it off each month, but the continuing running balance in 2023 was over $20,000. That's up from $6,000-ish in 2020, 3 years earlier. The average household student loan debt in 2023 was around $55,000, up from $46,000 and some change in 2020. The average 2024 car loan debt was over $24,000. 45% of all adult Americans have saved nothing for retirement. And get this, as of 2024, one in four baby boomers had saved nothing for retirement. Baby boomer, that's me. I retire in 2 months, okay? I'm 70 years old. That age group, those who are older than me and a little bit younger, one in four had nothing for retirement. By the way, I will say here, I use the word saved, and that's probably not correct. You invest for retirement. Long-term stuff is you invest, and you don't touch it because it's volatile. Saving is for short-term needs, and you keep it in a liquid, safe instrument like a money market or something like that, maybe CDs if you can handle the time frame. Anyway, 63% of Americans age 65 are dependent upon Social Security, relatives, friends, or just charity. Every spending decision is a spiritual decision. That's why we need to have a lesson on this. Now, to sum it up all into one reason, why should we have a lesson on finances in Sunday school? And that is, in the words of John Wayne, life's hard, it's harder when you're stupid. Now, this picture and the one right after it is an actual case study. I knew someone years ago who worked for a mortgage company, and they were in the debt collection area. This particular homeowner was way behind in his mortgage payments, and so they went out to find out what was going on. And this is a picture of a pool from inside the house. The outside had a three-story water slide that wasn't there when they borrowed money for the mobile home, an outdoor pool, and had a mobile home, and that's the homeowner who is several months behind on his mobile home mortgage. Ecclesiastes 10:3, even when the fool walks on the road, he lacks sense. And he says to everyone that he is a fool. Now, brothers and sisters, you might be stupid, I'm pointing to myself here too, that is, lack sense if you ever, like this guy in the previous example, bought a swimming pool when you couldn't make your house payments. But what if you borrowed money to buy a brand new car? What if you spend more than you make? What if you don't know if you spend more than you make? I think you can take the if out of that sentence then. What if you don't have an emergency fund? What if you use a credit card as an emergency fund? What if you don't save for known upcoming expenses? How many of you have ever had a car that never broke down, never needed new tires? You never went to the doctor in your life or needed to go? If you might be stupid if you're depending upon Social Security to support you during retirement. You might be stupid if you don't have a written budget and don't keep track of expenses and income. Brothers and sisters, there's not one adult in this room, including myself, that has not paid their stupid tax at one time or another in their life. We're in this together. Just like we're all sinners and we're seeking to be sanctified, even in things that are more material world, we've all made mistakes. And we want to find out what we did wrong, change them, and move forward. So today's lesson, this is what we're going to be talking about. Wealth and money. First, understanding what it truly is. Then we're going to talk about what is money and how does it relate to wealth. And some of this is some pretty basic financial stuff. We're going to talk about the pie fallacy. And then we're going to see from Scripture, it is no sin to possess large sums of wealth. And then what does the Shorter Catechism say about wealth? It's very interesting. We're going to secondly be talking about ownership and stewardship. Owners have rights. Stewards have responsibilities. So, what is wealth? If you want to create wealth, it will help to understand what it is. Wealth is not the same thing as money. Wealth is as old as human history. Money is a comparatively recent invention. Now, John D. Rockefeller, he was an oil titan, and he was the world's first billionaire, and on an inflation-adjusted basis, the wealthiest American of all time. He owned an estate in New York City, one in Lakewood, New Jersey, and another set on nearly 3,000 acres in Tarryton, New York. Plus, he had a winter home in Ormond Beach, Florida. Almost sounds like Bernie Sanders, the socialist. He had butlers, chefs, maids, drivers, and personal assistants. His prodigious wealth allowed him to buy the finest furniture, art, and any luxury he fancied. Now, I want to ask you, if you could, would you trade all the wealth that you have right now for what he had? Think long and hard before you answer, because by almost any objective standard, you are far richer today than Rockefeller was a century ago. Sure, he had huge homes and many of them, but they were without air conditioning, and they were sweltering hot and humid in the summer and inadequately heated in the winter. He traveled by chauffeured limousine without heat or air, but his cars frequently broke down on the rough, poorly maintained roads. And when that happened, he could not call for help or alert his friends or business associates that he would be late for a meeting or just not coming at all. After all, his phone was back home attached to the wall. Some of you don't even know what I'm talking about, some of you younger folks. That phone did not send or receive texts, and it did not take photos or videos, and for some strange reason, it didn't browse the internet. Now, if Rockefeller wanted to travel longer distances, he didn't just hop on a plane. Crossing the country took weeks, and so did sailing across the Atlantic and back, and he hoped and prayed for good weather. If he wanted to go shopping, choices were sparse. There were no designer clothes, no electronic gadgets. His entertainment choices were limited. There was no radio, no TV, no Netflix. Rockefeller could not download music, stream movies, or watch his favorite team on a large screen, ultra-high definition TV. His food choices were few and strictly limited to what was in season. There were few, or generally no, Chinese, Italian, Mexican, or Indian restaurants to patronize. He could not even conceive of our typical salad bar that we take for granted, because he could not have imagined a global transportation network with refrigerated systems capable of providing green beans from Mexico, apples from Poland, and cashews from Vietnam all together in the same meal at the same time. Despite his enormous fortune, Rockefeller and his family lived harder, dirtier, and gloomier lives than we do today. Most of those lives were shorter, too. His wife and daughters were far more likely to die during childbirth. His children and grandchildren were far less likely to survive infancy. Many infections, deadly and crippling diseases, had not yet been eradicated. Smallpox, yellow fever, and scarlet fever. Did you know that in the 19th century alone, there were 6 pandemics of cholera? And those diseases were far more deadly and debilitating than the COVID that gripped this nation with fear recently. Do you realize antibiotics were not developed until the mid-1900s? Think about when you get an infection, maybe a sinus infection or whatever, and you don't have an antibiotic, we just take it for granted. They didn't have those. Most Americans living under the poverty line today have central heat and air, indoor plumbing, a microwave, a smartphone, a flat panel TV, Wi-Fi, and a car. To repeat, if you want to create wealth, it'll help to understand what it is. Wealth is not the same thing as money. Wealth is as old as human history. Money is a comparatively recent invention. So, what is wealth? Wealth is the stuff we need and want. Food, clothes, houses, cars, gadgets, travel to interesting places, and so on. Wealth is not something that only those you perceive as rich have. It is all around us. The food you ate for breakfast, the clothes on your back, the building we are in, the lights and the heating and the air conditioning in this building. Wealth is a fundamental thing. You can have wealth without having money. If you had a magic machine that could, on command, make you a car, or cook you dinner, or do your laundry, or do anything else you wanted, you would not need money. Whereas, if you were in the middle of Antarctica, where there is nothing to buy, it would not matter how much money you had. Wealth is what you want, not money. But if wealth is an important thing, why does everyone talk about making money? Well, what is money? And money is just a way of moving wealth. And in practice, they're usually interchangeable. But they are not the same thing. And unless you plan to get rich by counterfeiting, talking about making money can make it harder to understand how to make money. So, money is just a medium of exchange and is a side effect of specialization. In a specialized society, most of the things you need, you can't make for yourself. If you want a potato or a pencil or a place to live, you have to get it from someone else. So how do you get the person who grows potatoes to give you some? You do it by giving him something he wants in return. But you can't get very far by trading things directly with the people who need them. If you make violins and none of the local farmers want one, how will you eat? The solution societies find as they get more specialized is to make the trade into a two-step process. Instead of trading violins directly for potatoes, you trade violins for, say, silver, which you can then trade again for anything else you need. This intermediate stuff, the medium of exchange, can be anything that's rare, portable, and its value is stable. Historically, metals have been the most common, but recently we've been using a medium exchange called the dollar that is portable and its rarity is backed by the U.S. government. The advantage of a medium of exchange is that it makes trade work. The disadvantage is that it tends to obscure what trade really means. People think that what a business done is make money, but money is just the intermediate stage, just a shorthand for whatever people want. What most businesses do is to create wealth. They do something that we want. Now, a surprising number of people retain from childhood the idea that there is a fixed amount of wealth in the world. Now, there is in any normal family a fixed amount of money at any point in time, but that's not the same thing. I can remember, I can remember believing as a child that if a few rich people had all the money, it left less for everyone else. Just like in the game of Monopoly, where one person gets richer at the expense of someone else who lands on a property like, you know, boardwalk with a hotel. Many people seem to continue to believe something like this well into adulthood. This fallacy is usually there in the background when you hear someone talking about how 1% of the population has 99% of the wealth. What leads people astray here is the abstraction of money. Money is not wealth. It's just something we use to move wealth around. So although there may be in certain specific moments, like your family this month, a fixed amount of money available to trade with other people for things you want, there is not a fixed amount of wealth in the world. Unlike the game of Monopoly, in the real world, you can create more wealth. Wealth is created. Wealth has been getting created and destroyed, but on the balance created for all of human history. Let's give an example. Suppose you own an old beat-up car. Instead of being a couch potato one summer, you could spend your time and resources restoring your car to pristine condition. In doing so, you create wealth. The world is, and you specifically are, one pristine old car the richer. And not just in some metaphorical way, if you sell your car, you will get more for it. In restoring your old car, you have made yourself richer. You have not made anyone else more poor. So there is obviously not a fixed pie. And in fact, when you look at it this way, you wonder why anyone would ever think that there was. This economic system in which a private individual uses his or her resources or those willingly invested by others and combines it with his labor and the labor of others freely and contractually given produces wealth, the things in this material world that people want and need. This economic system has produced more wealth than any other in history. Unfortunately, in this current generation, it is deemed as something evil. This economic system that is based on freedom and has produced wealth for people in all economic classes is called capitalism. And under the structure of capitalism, consumers get to choose what they want to consume. It is through the availability of choice that competition develops in the private sector to provide the best possible goods or services. This advantage leads to higher levels of innovation because the typical individual will buy the best possible item that they can afford. You will see affordable items of better quality under this economic structure than you would in a socialist economy. More and more people do not, however, want to work hard to increase their estate. They prefer get-rich-quick schemes. We're going to talk about two of them. The first is the lottery or just gambling in general. So on that. The lottery promotes greed while simultaneously discouraging a good work ethic. If the ads are any indication, people play the lottery in hopes of winning large sums of money, Most of us have a tendency to want things, more things, or to want nicer things than we currently own. The lottery suggests that you can easily get such things, not by working hard, but by buying little paper tickets. The book of Proverbs suggests a better method. Whoever gathers money little by little makes it grow. Proverbs 13:11. Second, the lottery promotes poor stewardship of personal finances. Statistically, playing the lottery doesn't make good financial sense. The lottery is designed to be a money-making tool for government coffers. In fact, state governments make quite a bit of money via various state and regional lotteries, and all of that money ultimately comes from people who had hoped to defy the laws of mathematics. The lottery can rightly be viewed as a tax on people who are bad at math. I've also heard it called a stupid tax. And unfortunately, oftentimes, this is true, oftentimes those who spend the most money on the lottery are those who can least afford to spend money on non-essentials. Which leads me to the final reason why the lottery is an all-around bad idea. The lottery promotes a predatory relationship between the state and its citizens. But if playing the lottery is poor stewardship of one's resources, then government promotion of the lottery is nothing more than the promotion of poor financial stewardship among its citizens. It is bad enough that governments typically provide large-scale examples of poor stewardship, but encouraging individual citizens to squander their resources seems to put the government in the position of seeking the ill-being of those whom it should serve and protect. Christians should have no part in encouraging the government in such an endeavor. The underlying reason why lotteries exist and are so profitable and so popular is lodged within all of our hearts to some degree or another. Innate selfishness causes us to want what we have not earned, and it causes us to want more than God has given us through the ordinary means of hard work and careful stewardship. Writing to believers, Paul warned about such an outlook when he wrote, "Those who want to get rich fall into temptation and a trap and into many foolish and harmful desires that plunge people into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. Some people eager for money have wandered from the faith and pierced themselves with many griefs." The second get-rich-quick scheme is called socialism. The underlying reason socialism has become more popular in our current generation is the same reason why lotteries exist. Innate selfishness causes us to want what we have not earned, and it causes us to want more than God has given us through the ordinary means of hard work and careful stewardship. The economist Thomas Sowell said it succinctly, "Much of the appeal of socialism comes from the fact that it allows people to feel morally superior without having to bear the cost of their policies. It's easy to advocate sharing when someone else pays the price." Capitalism produces wealth and encourages a good work ethic and promotes freedom in our economic choices. The lottery produces no wealth and discourages a good work ethic. Socialism consumes the wealth that capitalism produces. Ultimately, it uses the foundation of a totalitarian government, just look at history, to dictate how each person can live their life. It is built on covetousness, envy, and our innate selfishness to want what other people have earned. So, is it a sin to possess a large amount of wealth? Well, consider Isaac. And the scriptures tell us that Isaac sowed in that land and reaped in the same year 100-fold. The Lord blessed him, and the man became rich and gained more until he became very wealthy. He had possessions of flocks and herds and many servants so that the Philistines envied him. What about Job? He possessed 7,000 sheep, 3,000 camels, 500 yoke of oxen, and 500 female donkeys and very many servants, so that this man was the greatest of all the people of the East. Abram. Now, Abram was very rich in livestock, in silver, and in gold. Okay, we don't have time to talk about Boaz, Solomon, David, Jehoshaphat, Hezekiah, Jacob, and Joseph of Arimathea. Exodus 20:17, you shall not covet your neighbor's home. You shall not covet your neighbor's wife or his male servant or his female servant or his ox or his donkey or anything that is your neighbor's. It is no sin to possess a large amount of wealth, but it is a sin to covet the possessions of the wealthy. So what does a shorter catechism have to say about handling wealth? Okay, question 73. What is the eighth commandment? Thou shalt not steal. What is required in the eighth commandment? The eighth commandment requires the lawful procuring and furthering the wealth and outward estate of ourselves and others. What is forbidden in the eighth commandment? The eighth commandment forbids whatsoever does or may unjustly hinder our own or our neighbor's wealth or outward estate. The eighth commandment requires the lawful procuring and furthering the wealth and outward estate of ourselves and of others. And unlike the game of Monopoly, in where the real world, you create more wealth. You can't in the game of Monopoly. So if the pie is fixed and you can only earn more wealth when it takes from others, then the shorter catechism is a lie. So what do the scriptures say about proper attitudes toward wealth? To sum it up, it is a sin to gain wealth by unlawful means, to hoard your wealth, to trust in wealth, and to spend it upon your appetites. The scriptures admonish us to increase, manage, and not squander our wealth, and to enjoy what God has given us. The sin of commission is setting your heart on worldly riches and coveting the wealth of others. The sin of omission is failing to manage and failing to produce wealth. Wealth should be the byproduct of a productive life, not the goal for which we live. We should have a broader understanding of wealth, which rests not so much in possessions as in the quality of life, a life blessed with a good name, that is respected and experiences love and it blesses others. That is true wealth, which can only be gained by worthwhile pursuits. The blessing of the Lord makes rich, and he has no sorrow with it, Proverbs 10:22. Of course, good people are not financially successful, and evil people often become wealthy. And there are some references of scripture in your handouts to that. Godliness put into practice through wisdom gives a person a better likelihood of financial prosperity. Now listen carefully, but again, it is the byproduct, it is not the goal. The contrast expressed in this verse is not a guarantee of prosperity, but a comparison between wealth gained righteously and that is opposed to that obtained by deception. I got to get another drink here. Now we're going to be talking about ownership and stewardship. Psalm 95:4-5. In his hands are the depth of the earth. The heights of the mountains are his also. The sea is his, for he made it, and his hands formed the dry land. Psalm 24:1. The earth is the Lord's, and the fullness thereof, and the world and those who dwell therein. God has the right to whatever he wants, whenever he wants it. An owner has rights. Stewardship. We don't have time to read the entire parable, but recall that it starts with, for it will be like a man going on a journey who called his servants and entrusted to them his property. To one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, and to another 1, to each according to his ability. So what words, you recall, were used to describe the servant who hid his master's money? First, he was called wicked. Now, did he steal the money? No. Did he use it for his own benefit? No. Think about that. He even protected the money so it would not be stolen, yet he was called wicked. He committed none of the sins that we typically associate with wickedness. He was called lazy. A sluggard is another name Scripture uses to describe this person. Sluggards have a love of ease and always have a reason why they can't work or perform a task. We're going to discuss this individual in greater detail in a couple of following lessons. He's also called unprofitable. The unprofitable servant, although he did not steal or use his master's money for personal gain, he produced no gain or good result with what he was entrusted with. Now, what words were used to describe the servants who were praised by their master? They were called good and faithful. Now, what specific actions did these good and faithful servants take? They went and traded the talents. In other words, they worked. Stewardship. Remember that God has the right to whatever he wants. Whenever he wants it, an owner has rights. We, as stewards, have only responsibilities. We may possess much, but we own nothing. Every spending decision is a spiritual decision. Not only are our tithes and offerings a spiritual decision, but so is our purchasing a car, taking a vacation, buying food, or paying our taxes. So let's summarize today's lesson, go over the points. Most personal financial problems are the lack of behavior that is not sinful, just lacking sense, i.e. stupid. Life is hard. It's harder when you're stupid. Wealth is the stuff we want and need. Wealth is created. There is not a fixed amount of wealth in the world. Money is what we use to represent wealth. It is no sin to possess large amounts of wealth, but it is a sin to covet the wealth of others. We sin when we set our hearts on wealth and fail to manage what the Lord has entrusted to us. God owns it all. Owners have rights. We as stewards have responsibilities. Every spending decision is a spiritual decision. Now, next week, we're concluding now. Lord willing, we're going to be talking about lesson number two is creating wealth. That is about our work. We're going to be talking about work ethics and things like that. And the scripture verse that's a theme of this whole series is, know well the condition of your flocks and give attention to your herds. For riches do not last forever, and does a crown endure to all generations? So that concludes today's lesson. Thomas, would you lead us in a word of prayer as we close?